You're listening to the FQXI podcast. Welcome to the first podcast of 2013 from the Foundational Questions Institute. As you can probably tell from our name, we like to, question the foundations of physics and reality. And so we thought we'd start off the year by discussing one of the biggest questions of all about the origin of the universe. Is God behind everything?
So nothing too controversial then. God has been in the air for the past few weeks. For instance, at the end of last year, theoretical physicist, FQXI member, black hole expert and committed Christian Don Page posted a paper suggesting that if God exists, he'd choose to create a multiverse of many parallel universes rather than just one universe because it's more mathematically beautiful. As I understand it, Page's argument is that though we often see human suffering when we look around us, a problem that has caused many to doubt the existence of a benevolent God, if a multiverse exists, then perhaps when we sum over all the different versions of ourselves in each parallel reality, the overall amount of good in the multiverse is maximized. In that way, God allows the best collection of possible universes to exist.
Trust me to be stuck in the parallel universe where I have to do this podcast month after month. Will my suffering never end? I'm not sure what I think of Don Page's paper, though. I'm not even sure that God is something...
That sounded dramatic. That sounded like God was intervening there.
So I'm not even sure that God is something that lies within the scope of a scientific podcast.
Yeah, I wasn't sure either, to be honest. But earlier this month, I attended the Is God Explanatory meeting that brought together astronomers, cosmologists, philosophers and theologians at the University of Oxford, and where the question of whether God should be thought of as a scientific theory was discussed. One of the contributors to the meeting was Caltech cosmologist and FQXI member Sean Carroll, who gave a number of talks. We chatted about whether God can be assessed as a theory alongside other cosmological ideas, such as the multiverse. We also discussed Don Page's paper. The meeting is just one of a number that are being held as part of a broader program to examine the philosophy of cosmology. Now, cosmology is an ancient subject that was often classified as philosophical in the past. Only relatively recently has it become more established as a precision science, as Carroll explained.
Yeah, I think that cosmology is something that people have thought about for a very, very long time. It has not become very scientific until relatively recently, let's say the last 100 years. What we call modern scientific cosmology really didn't take off until two things. Number one, Einstein with general relativity, giving us a framework in which to talk about the universe as a whole and its behavior. And then Hubble establishing that the universe was very large and expanding. And so that put in place the Big Bang theory and so forth, and that really established what cosmology was as a science. But it was still very hard to get data that actually adjudicated between different possibilities. So it's really in the last few decades that we've really begun doing precision cosmology and measuring the inventory of the universe, precisely characterizing how fast it's expanding and talking about what the future might be.
So you've been invited to speak at this particular meeting, which is called the Is God Explanatory meeting. So can you explain a bit about what people have been talking about here and what you're planning to talk about, what you have spoken about already?
And so really what all of us are talking about are questions like, could it conceivably be sensible and interesting to have God as a category that is helpful when we try to understand the universe?
So the title of one of your talks is God is Not a Good Theory. So the first question is, what do you mean by a theory? Are you talking about a scientific theory? And then what do you mean by that? Or are you talking about something wider than that, a philosophical theory?
Yeah, I put that as the title because I wanted to preempt the kind of discussion that says we shouldn't talk about God in the same way that we talk about scientific theories. I think there's no question that the interesting ways to think about God are ways that brings him under the microscope that can be talked about in terms of evidence for and against ordinary scientific hypotheses. So I think that in that sense, God is an idea that about the universe that could be true or false. And the way that we have empirically done a good job of judging the worthiness of such ideas is to make predictions on the basis of them and compare them with data. That's what science is all about.
But that sort of seems a little bit unfair, just simply because I think nobody has tried to make predictions based on the idea of God.
Certainly people have claimed that God provides the best possible explanation for things that we have already observed. For instance, there's a famous argument in favor of the existence of God on the basis of the fine-tuning of the universe that we see around us. The parameters of physics and cosmology allow for the existence of life, even though, the argument goes, there's a very small fraction of all such possible parameters that would allow for life to exist. Therefore, our best explanation is that God made them that way. And that's a kind of prediction. That's kind of using God as an explanation. And my point in the talk was that you don't get credit for using God as an explanation for something unless you should also be able to predict other things that you haven't yet observed. And nobody does try to do that in general. And so I'm saying that that is trying to have things both ways in an illegitimate way.
You know, you brought up the fine-tuning problem. Can you talk a little bit more about perhaps some scientific explanations for that, or what you would think constitutes a good theory put forward to explain this?
Well, it's a difficult question to answer because the fact that we are allowed to exist is not something that could have been false from our point of view, right? So it's not even clear there is any sensible discussion to be had about this particular question. But to the extent that there is one, there's various different possibilities. The simplest possibility is we just got lucky. You know, fortunately, the parameters of physics and cosmology allow for life to exist. How fortunate is that? A slightly more predictive possibility is that there is a multiverse, that conditions in the universe as a whole, the largest possible conception of the universe, are physically different from place to place. And in that case, if the parameters that govern physics take on different values in different locations, of course there will be a strong selection effect. We will find ourselves in a region where the parameters are hospitable to the existence of life. And I think that's a very plausible scientific theory. I don't know if it's right or not, but it's certainly on the table as an explanation for why the parameters seem to be finely tuned.
Do you think that the two possibilities that you've put up there as possible explanations have to stand in opposition to people believing in God?
No, you certainly could believe in, let's say, the multiverse and believe in God. I don't think there's any objection to that at all. But many of the arguments from theologians about the fine-tuning fact about the universe that we apparently see, say that they don't like the multiverse hypothesis. It's ontologically extravagant, it's asking us too much, and God is a better explanation because it's very simple and he doesn't require all these extra universes. So even though I think you could allow both for the multiverse and God, the ideas that are conventionally put in opposition are multiverse versus God.
I guess now might be a good time to bring up a sort of a very different paper that came up on the archive a few weeks ago by Don Page, where he tried to, I guess, address the fact that the multiverse and God are often put in opposition and try to make a case that maybe if God existed, he would actually choose a multiverse over a single universe. What do you think of that idea?
Well, Don is a firm believer in the existence of God, Don Page, and he's also a very well-educated theoretical cosmologist. So he knows that when we look at the universe, we don't see God violating the laws of physics all the time. So therefore, he concludes that apparently it's a feature of God that God likes to obey the laws of physics, or at least preserve them. And therefore, he says, if we have laws of physics that would naturally give rise to a multiverse, that's what God would naturally let happen. So from my point of view, what you're saying there is that God exists, but the universe behaves in exactly the way it would behave if God didn't exist. And then I begin to wonder what the point of invoking God in the first place was.
I get to go to a lot of cosmology meetings as part of my job. And one thing that's quite interesting, especially if they're sort of covering a number of different topics, is I've noticed that, you know, there'll be a session about the multiverse and perhaps trying to detect evidence of the multiverse or just, you know, talking about various theories. And a large number of the cosmologists and physicists at the meeting will sort of roll their eyes. Some of them walk out. And if you go and ask them why, they'll say, well, you know, this isn't science. This is religion. This is just philosophy. you know, I think what's upsetting to a certain portion of people is that they think it's a bit of a waste of time to think about something that perhaps realistically, at least for now, can't be falsified. What do you think about that argument?
Well, I think there are two things going on. One is that many scientists are really not very good at the philosophy of science. They have a couple of little mottos that they rely on, and they throw them out there, and they try to justify their beliefs about the relative value of different theories on the basis of these sort of cartoonish versions of the philosophy of science. The second is that the multiverse idea is not anywhere near well-developed. It's not a clear idea. It does not make clear predictions that we can compare against the data right now. We don't understand the measure problem, the mechanism for making the multiverse. And so in many, many ways, the multiverse is not a very well-articulated theory. And so if the multiverse, I think, were well articulated, if it made very clear and crisp predictions, then these objections would go away. And the predictions might be ones where we're not actually observing the multiverse, we're not observing other universes. But if the multiverse made predictions for what we should expect to observe concerning parameters within our observable universe, or is there supersymmetry? Do the supersymmetric particles have masses? What is the dark matter? Is there different kinds of dark matter in different relative abundances? So we can certainly, before we discovered the Higgs, we had the Higgs boson mass, and you could certainly try to make predictions for all of those different features, not to mention cosmological features like the evolution of the dark energy and so forth. So what the multiverse is trying to do is to help us understand what kinds of questions are interesting ones about the universe we do actually observe. This is not just philosophy ungrounded from reality. All of the talk of the multiverse is ultimately motivated by trying to understand the data that we have.
You've mentioned a couple of sort of big mysteries there that we still haven't solved: dark matter, dark energy. So maybe this is a good time to ask you about something that you've recently been blogging about, something that you wanted to talk about at these meetings. I think you put out an equation, and I'll ask you to explain what it is, but we've been getting letters about it at FQXI. So let me sort of hand it over to you to tell us what that equation is and what you hope that it signifies or stands for.
Well, I think it's an underappreciated fact that as we go around in our everyday lives and we see around us, you know, table chairs, sun, moon, and stars, living beings, inorganic beings, these are all collections of atoms and particles that are described by fundamental physics, the standard model of particle physics and general relativity in the case of gravity. And as far as that fundamental physics of everyday life underlying the phenomena that we observe in our everyday existence is concerned, we have a complete theory. We are done. We know what you and I are made out of, and we know the fundamental rules by which the atoms that you and I are made out of behave. And not only do we have a theory that works, we have very, very good reason to believe that that theory is not going to change over the next million years. When it comes to physics beyond our everyday experience, when it comes to black holes or dark matter or the beginning of the universe, then obviously we don't understand the final laws of physics. There's plenty more physics to be discovered. But 1,000 years from now, when we talk about human beings, we will still describe them as being made of the particles in the standard model. If there were other fields, other particles that were relevant to human life or everyday experience, we would have discovered them already. That is a consequence of how quantum field theory works. You can't hide new fields in one way without being able to discover them in some other way. So that's an important milestone for human intellectual achievement. We have a theory that is sufficient to describe the particles that you and I are made out of. Now, people don't like to hear that because either, number one, they say, well, what about black holes and so forth? And I have to point out that black holes are not part of our everyday life. Or number two, they say, well, you can't explain chemistry or biology or economics or anything like that. To which I say, well, obviously not. There's no sense that just because you understand the underlying rules means that you understand the higher level emergent descriptions. That should be perfectly clear. In fact, understanding the underlying rules is of no help when it comes to understanding economics or biology or anything like that.
Did you get a chance to present that equation at this meeting? And what was your sort of point in the context of this discussion about God?
And so I'm going to try to make two points. One is that given this fundamental description in terms of particles and fields, there are consequences of that description. There are limits on the possible higher level descriptions that you can imagine are legitimate. For example, astrology is incompatible with the standard model of particle physics. There's no force of nature that could influence our personality on the basis of where Saturn is on the day we were born or anything like that. For that matter, life after death is not compatible with the standard model. There's no way for the information in a human brain to sort of sustain itself outside the body. On the other hand, that's the first point. The other hand, there's still plenty of room for different higher level descriptions that are compatible with the standard model. I think it's perfectly legitimate to ask questions about free will, about purpose and meaning, about teleology. There are many different emergent descriptions that can be compatible with the same underlying physics. And that's the interesting way forward in terms of relating human life to this fundamental talk about particles and fields.
Well, thank you to Sean Carroll for explaining why he believes science leaves no room for either astrology or religion. Despite having strong views, I think he gave a very balanced argument, weighing up both sides, exactly as we would expect from someone whose star sign is Libra, the scales.
Indeed, very, very balanced. On our podcast page, www.fqxi.org/community/podcast, we've included a link to Sean's personal blog where you can read more about his trip to Oxford and the equation that he claims explains the underlying physics of our everyday experiences. Not everyone agrees that this audacious claim is correct, though, and we have also linked to FQXI member Ian Durham's counterargument to this claim, and also to Don Page's paper about God and the multiverse.